talk about today. First, I want to try and trace your club, beginning when you rejoined the party in 33 and then when you transferred, when you moved here and transferred to the Southwest section, and what happened to it over the years.
Well, when I...
which was the first one that you were in Los Angeles?
The first time that I went back to I had always been active in the ILD and in the Friends of the Soviet Union, but I hadn't gone back to the party until 1936. In 1936, you know, through the urgings of some of the other comrades, you know, I went back to active duty and everything. But at that time, what disturbed me was that there was a kind of there was a dedication, and yet you couldn't depend on them to do things there. For instance, someone who would come in and take a bunch of leaflets, and I'd find them scattered under the bridge or something. And that, to me, was a horrible thing because, you know, people paid money for it, you know, and everything. And that's what it was for, to educate, to make the people aware of it. And that bothered me very, very much, that I saw that dedication that had existed years before. It wasn't quite the same way. It wasn't quite... And then there had grown up, I often said, you know, if you were studying Catholicism, you couldn't be more Catholic in the ways than you are. Instead of being the Communist Party, you could be a kind of a Catholic party. I said, to keep on always, thou shalt not this, and thou shalt not this. I said, it's only through asking and questioning that you find out. And you know, so then they begin to say, well, you know our Barbie. You know, she's a stony
petrol. Was this in your own club, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, was this the first club that you went into then?
The first club I went into was... And I stayed in this district anyway. It was in the Southwest, more or less. But we did go to others of the... but only to visit, you know, and everything.
And how many were in your club then?
At that time, I think there were about 10, which was a whole lot. And, of course, we were told to become, you know, there was the time of the phone tappings and people. One of the Austrian spies is a friend of ours who came here. He was an educated man. And Frank Spector.
Oh, yes, he told me about him, the Hjernquist.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we talked about this, some of the spies last time.
Yes.
What I wasn't clear about was, it seems that when you moved here, you shifted to a different club.
Well, yes, but it was still the Southwest, only it was more south.
Well, there were a group of clubs that were part of the Southwest region.
Yes, yes. There was one Southwest club that started at Normandy and then cleared beyond the Central. And then there was the one that started at Slawson, which the Taylors belonged to, and came up to Manchester.
But when you moved then, you would shift into
yes, each other. Yes, but you know, another thing that happened was that before we had enough members in any neighborhood that we could have a neighborhood club practically. But now there had been a change. Sometimes people had to come from big distances to come. You know, for instance, the club I belong to here, one of the main things that we went to be on Crenshaw. And I just met one of the old-time members, Charlie Gladstone. He was a rich guy. And he had a beautiful home in Inglewood. And he was the one who taught... Daughter's books that the books Daughter wrote about the wall. So in one of them he said that we have to support, if J.P. Morgan puts his hand out to you, then take it. Mm-hmm. Now, they are communists here, they're tongue-in-cheek, and said this does not apply to them. And I said to Charlie, Charlie, he means me. He says, you mean you have tendency? I said, Charlie, now be honest with me. This is not your class now. Just you and me. Tell me, don't you have your tendency? Do you believe that? J.P. Morgan is going to extend his hand in the airplaneship to me. We just got through a horrible war where millions were killed through the same forces that J.P. Morgan controls. And he said, now, do you believe that? He said, no. I said, and why are you teaching it? He said, because the party told me to.
Now, he was in your club?
Yes, he was in my club.
Well, Barbara, what happened to... Now, this is the first club, though, that you're talking about, the one... Before you moved here?
The first one was when we lived on 65th Street. Mm-hmm. That was the one that between Slauson and Manchester. And there were some people from Inglewood.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. But you see, but the funny thing was that one of the black people, Louis Rosser, who had been in my house and trusted like I would have in my own son, but not too close, you know. I did really nothing for him. Others who did so much for him, he betrayed them all. He had become drunk, lush, and when Walter Martin tried to report him to upper higher, they said that Walter must be jealous of him and wouldn't accept it. But when he was on there testifying against my husband, you know, for the to deport him to and everything. They asked him, did you meet his daughter in Esther's home often? He said, yes. He said, and what did she say? Did she ever say for violent revolution? She said, no, all she ever spoke about was peace, that we should live in peace and work for peace. I was so amazed. Now here, someone who had been so good to him and everything, he told that the meetings they had where they had, and ascribed to them saying that some things I knew they had never said.
Mm.
Because nobody went around talking about violent revolution, you know, and using guns or anything. No one ever talked that way. No, at the party, never. I never remember once that the party ever advocated that. They advocated sometimes a little hanky-panky, you know. They did, you know, what did that mean compared to the greater... But violent, you know, absolutely...
Now, was he one of the few blacks in your club, or were there several?
He wasn't even in my club.
Oh.
He really belonged to the Central Avenue group.
Were there any blacks in either of your clubs?
Yes, there was only one or two, you know. There was a lot of visitors who came, like the Pettus Perry, who didn't belong to our club. He, you know, he was at large, and he came often. And he believed in the self-determination of the black belt.
Mm-hmm.
And we had violent disagreements on that, because I never did. And I said, Pete, I can't understand how you can do it. He says, don't you think we have a right to choose? I said, but you would have no opportunity. What do you mean, right? Well, what has right to do with it? You'd have no opportunity for it. And by the time you'd have an opportunity, you wouldn't need it. Because by that time, you would have the things you were fighting for. You wouldn't need it. So what do you want, a separate black nation in the midst of it? He said, yes, that's what I want. I said, well, then, Pete, most of the black people that I've talked to, at that time they said Negro, we didn't say black people. Most of the Negroes I've talked to don't agree with you at all. They want only what the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence guarantees to everyone. They have no other culture. They came back from Africa. They weren't allowed to, if three people were seen walking, talking together, and that's why they became religious. At least in the church they could talk to one another. That's why they accepted so much of it and everything. Now, but they couldn't do it. Yet. And pretty soon they knew nothing of the language, they knew nothing of the culture, they knew nothing of any philosophy pertaining to it. So all they knew was the thing they learned in school about the Declaration of Independence, about the Constitution. And they wanted their constitutional rights.
Well, Barbara, he would just come and visit, though. He wasn't actually in your club, in other words.
No, he wasn't in the club, but he really, I don't know that, See, he was awfully scared. He had been picked up by the police a number of times. Mm-hmm. At that time, there was, you know, I remember when a friend and myself had distributed some leaflets, we left them on a bench, and we didn't see anyone there yet. In a few minutes, a policeman came over and said, "You left those leaflets on that bench." I said, "What leaflets?" She was very bright, and she'd been in New York and knew all the things. She knew a whole lot more of strategy than I did. And she said, "So we said, what leaflets?" And he said, "Why, I saw you, Lisa." I said, "You didn't see us. You thought, but you imagined it us. But evidently you couldn't have seen us, or we'd have seen you too." And we've been here the whole time. He said, "Well, now you know you weren't here the whole time." I said, "Who should know better whether we were or not than we, not you? You're looking for someone, but it's not us." So you see how they were the restaurant for leaving a leaflet in the door.
And well, then Robert, within your club itself, though, then there were no blacks within the club itself, either of the two clubs you were in. Was it mainly Jews?
There were some black people, but they came all the way from the Central Avenue to think people could be there. There were no black people living around. Here it's almost all black now. Here in my neighborhood, there's only three white families on one side of the, and we're one of them. Otherwise,
well,
it's almost all black.
Was it mainly Jews then in the club?
Jews.
In the club?
Yes, there were more Jews than black people, I can tell you that, yes. The other members of the club that are here live near Crenshaw, and he had been in the war, and he vowed that when he got out of the war and saw what the war did, that he would never make a secret of it, and he would come out, you know. Then when he found out he couldn't get a job,
How about any Asians? Was it all white, the club? We had a
Japanese comrade. And the Chinese comrade, we had, as a matter of fact, we had several Japanese and several Chinese.
This was in your club then?
Yes.
Because that would be that district.
Yes.
And did they stay in the party the whole time, or did they leave?
You know, when that thing was that they had to go, but then they came back to the club.
Oh, after they went to the concentration camp.
You know, one of the things that I've always been ashamed of is that we didn't put up a fight against it. Carolina's professor at that time, when she was at UCLA, he said, "Carolina, someday your party and the rue the day that, because the Japanese have been guilty of nothing. The Germans who have a Hindenburg Park and have distributing leaflets and have Hitlerites all over, they haven't been touched. But the Japanese, who know haven't shown in any way anything at all, they are the ones who are gone ahead and put in concentration camps."
Did the Japanese members of your club talk about it before they left or once they came back?
Yeah, when they came back, they had a bitterness about it. Yes, they did have a bitterness about it, but they accepted it. But he said, "You know, they told us," he said, "they was for our protection." And I remember when some Japanese, when they were at 9 o'clock at night, you know, they're coming to our house. The police picked them up and they told us they were Koreans. They were traitors. But they said to them, and they got to go, "Are these your friends? Yes, these are our friends. What do you know about?" And let me tell you another thing. This same Japanese guy, he had written to Washington. He was quite skilled in certain things, asking for a job, and he had given us as references. So my husband, who, you know, was his best friend, he wanted me to write and say that I was suspicious of him. I said, "Why, you louse, you. How could I have gone to say that? I'm not suspicious of Ray and everything." He said, "Well, you know, he was associating with a whole bunch of people who were selling rotten cars and everything." I said, "He may have known them. He wasn't associated with them." So I wrote back, "Ray is a friend of ours, but I know nothing about his life in any way other except that he's a friend. And I know nothing bad about him. I know nothing that's suspicious about him. I know nothing at all about him. His personal life, I know nothing about. But he is a friend of long standing, and that's all. So I wasn't recommending him so that if by chance there was, because after all, I didn't really know anything at all about him. But he remembered that I had not written that, and he came to see us. And there was a German guy who, Dan had a coat that somebody owed him a lot of money, about $75, and couldn't pay it, so they gave him this coat for $75. So this German guy wanted the coat, and Ray wanted it. Well, Dan, my husband, I thought he should have let Ray have it. He let the German have it. All the Japanese came back into the party after the war.
Did the ones who come back talk about their experience and their attitudes towards the party's position at all? Do you recall?
Yes, not to any great length, but they had a bitterness about it anyway, you know.
And did it cause you to reassess what the party's position had been?
Yes. I thought things was wrong. Because we accepted it, then they told it's to protect them, not for anything else, it's just to protect them. So I thought, well, that, knowing that Ray had come, you know, and said he was a Korean, I thought perhaps that was true, you know. But afterward, the first time that I felt there was when Carol June told me what her professor said. And I thought, well, now, he knows more of the subject behind that. Perhaps we go along. But up to then, I had accepted the party's position that it was to protect them.
Barbara, to your knowledge of the Japanese who were in the party, who were sent to the camps, did they form a cell of the party in the camps, do you know?
No, I don't think so.
They just dropped out during that time period?
Yeah.
Well, in your club then, out of the 10 people, how many were Chinese and Japanese, do you recall?
There were only 2 Japanese, and there were 2 Chinese. And the 2 Chinese came from San Francisco. They weren't really living around here. But I found that the most idealistic of all were the Chinese. But I loved the Japanese comers. I really had a great, great respect for them and their liking for them and everything. And had a great deal of sympathy. But I really never found that they had any resentment against the party about it.
That's interesting. Well, in 1954, which section were you then, which club were you then in? That same club, or had you already moved by then?
Well, we moved here in 1946. So here then, this was the Southwest club then, and that was the one that most of the comers that we met, and I said, there's this young guy who had been in the army, and he lived near Crenshaw, and we met at his house. I had to be very careful about meeting, and then I remember that he organized also a thing that going to market and distributing leaflets, and he said, when some said it's kind of dangerous, he says, nothing half as dangerous as standing there with a gun, that a gun, that you're going to kill someone or someone's going to be quicker than you are is going to kill you. And I found out that the only thing that is dangerous is not this, to keep your mouth shut. And they really undertook it. They had a little girl about 6 years old, and she sang and said, Mr. Bilbo, listen to me, and I'll sing you a song of liberty. The farmers that you hate are the very ones who made America great.
Did he remain in the party? Did he remain in the party?
He remained in the party for quite a long while. I think he was one of the most dedicated of all. I think his wife, though, began to, you know, things were threatened by her job. She also had a job as a secretary somewhere. And that they had to begin thinking also of their own family and everything.
Well, Barbara, tell me, what I'd like to do is talk about within your club and also within your other associations, that first with Hungary, then with, in 1956, with the Khrushchev revelations, and then ultimately with Czechoslovakia. What kind of discussions happened in the club, and what happened in terms of people leaving? first with hungry, what you would call your immediate reaction to?
Well, with hungry, at first, when the Soviet Union came back, I justified the Soviet Union coming back because they were beginning to kill communists and Jews in Hungary and everything, and I thought that the Soviet Union had no, that was the prime duty to come back and everything to save lives. So I had nothing against the Soviet Union for that, you know.
Now, were there arguments in your group about it, though, or did everyone support the Soviet Union right away?
Most of them supported the Soviet Union. If there was any argument about it, I can hardly remember any argument about it. But the Khrushchev report, that was the most astounding thing that ever happened in the party. It was just like a thunderbolt. It was just like a thunderbolt. And I said to Dorothy, wouldn't it be strange if they even cleared this Trotsky they'll never do. I said, I wouldn't be so sure about that. I said, even Dorothy used to get after me. I said, I like Trotsky better than Stalin. You don't know anything at all about Trotsky. I said, I know as much as you do. What do you know about him? He said, I don't. I know one thing, that he was no counter-revolutionist and that he was no fascist. That one I know for sure. She said, but what you're against is killing people. Trotsky killed a lot of people. Even Lenin began to say, look, this poor peasant is just a kid. He didn't know that and he was tired. He fell asleep. You don't kill him for that. Yeah. If it's only killing, she says, why are you supporting Trotsky? But I did like Trotsky better than Stalin.
Well, what kinds of things within the party, within your club, happened over the Khrushchev revelation?
Well, you see, as I say, it was like a thunderbolt. And many of them tried to tell me about the good things that Stalin had done. But here, after all, the socialist system has survived. I said, no thanks to him. It was because of the millions who died for it, not a bear out of him. People have sides that turn the other way, you know.
Oh, so there was a real tenacity on the part of some of them to continue to support Stalin.
Yes. Thanks to Stano, him. Mm-hmm. Well, my God, at one of the meetings at that Murray Abbevis' house, Murray has a beautiful home out there in the valley. When he got up and he said that he blessed anyone who did that, said these things about Stalin. Stalin was a great man. He kept the revolution going. If not for him, they would have destroyed socialism. And I said to Dorothy, he's just an asshole. That's what he is. I don't know how he can say that.
What there seemed to have been was a split over people who were probably critical all along, and this now gave them their opening, and those who continued to support Stalin.
But there wasn't a split on account of it. They did have disagreements, and they had discussions about it and everything, and some few did support him anyway, and some of us, I guess I was a pretty strong petrol in that respect. I just never liked Stalin.
Yeah.
When all those murders took place there, I just didn't like Stalin.
Now, weren't there a lot of defections from the party at this time? What about in your own club? Were there?
Well, there was a few who left, like Ruth from her sister, who was in the club with me, and she said to me once, 10 years of my life I've given for nothing. I hear you make me sick. You never gave anything for nothing. I said, the thing that you got out of the Communist Party, the understanding of the social forces, are worth everything. So there were things, that we weren't alert to, because we weren't trained to thinking and to analyzing and everything. But to say that, I said, the most thing that made me understand about life and what's going on was knowing about socialism and communism. And you didn't give... For you to say now, all you're saying now is that you would like to have an opportunity to get out and go ahead. And she did become a professor.
Mm-hmm. Now, she was in your section?
Yes. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, she was the head of the section at one time.
But
Rose Sherman was in jail,
oh.
She took over for Rose.
Oh, you were in the same section as Rose?
No. The Rose covered a wide field at that time, you see. Much wider than just the clubs, you know.
Now, what, do you recall anyone else in your section who left over the Khrushchev revelation?
Most of the ones that left were she and her husband, Norman. But Norman was a fool. He did whatever, you know, so it didn't really make much of a difference. His brother now, who lives in the valley, is a wonderful guy.
Were there arguments in the section, Barbara? Were there in the section, in your club itself, were there, because you talked about Frank and Fauna, but within your own group, were there people who were still supporting Fallon?
Yes, Ann Coulton did to some extent. Nothing really real warm-hearted, but they did acknowledge that he had done. I never could see that he did anything good. Mm. See, I went to the other extreme, perhaps. And I still don't think he did.
Well, do you think their defense was, what do you think motivated their defense? Do you think it was just that all those years they had believed and it was too hard to give that up, or what?
That's right. I think that was one of the things. And they thought that, I don't know how they could defend him at all. I really can't understand it. To this day, I can't understand it.
Mm.
And, you know, I've been fond of Frank Pastrana and his wife, particularly Jean. I'm very fond of Jean and everything. But I thought when Frank Pastrana made these, I thought he was a fool. And I thought he can't be very bright.
Well, despite this, there at this point in 56 still were no really open wounds over it, though. It doesn't sound like.
Well, you see, even Dorothy says that there were some good things you can't forget that Stalin did. I said, what were they? I really can't. I don't think that. She says, Mama, if Stalin hadn't done some of those things, even with the kulaks, they wouldn't have had the developed economy to have fought the Nazis. So how can you disregard this thing and yet only see the other things? So he did these things. But remember that they were in a country that had no vestige of any kind of democracy, and they were fighting the most horrible things in the world. I mean, the guys with the knouts, the beatings, the blinding and everything, they weren't all dead, and these were the kind of people they were fighting against. Why do you think they had to kill the Tsar and his family right away? Because they would have been all over, there would have been millions would have died because they would have organized all kinds of groups to try to save him, to rescue him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we even had a song about it.
Oh, what was that?
And one of them, for gladly they'll put a new throne on this, a new Tsar on the throne. But Lenin's an army. Well, I think, you know, they become a little hazy. But those songs really, I thought, were wonderful.
Well, Barbara, then it sounds like the initial revelations were a thunderbolt, and there was some disagreement over if Stalin had done any good or not. But then, about a year later, isn't that the period where there was tremendous upheaval in the party between 56 and 58 and discussions about opening up the party more and making it more democratic, and
yes,
before she was in a dissident position then?
Yes, that's true. There was, and we did. We invited people into meetings. That's true. There was more. But one thing they always frowned upon, and I remember when Ellery Bloor, Mother Bloor, when she said, we will tolerate many things, but one thing we will not tolerate is any criticism of the Soviet Union. And Ellery Bloor was a pretty staunch, and she was a fine person.
What was this?
This was in 19...
That would have been earlier, though, wasn't it?
Yes, it would have been in 1958.
Yeah. Well, in this period, it seems like from about 56 to 58 is when there was a tremendous upheaval in the party. Do you recall, like, in your own exception, or, and this is when Dorothy was viewed as a dissident, wasn't she beginning then?
Well, Dorothy was a dissident in this respect. She didn't think, really, that they should have thrown Browder out of the party.
Mm-hmm.
She thought that that was a mistake, that Browder could still serve as his mm-hmm. purpose, and when Browder wrote anything, he wrote with a whole lot more sense than Foster. Mm-hmm. Foster really wrote a lot of dribble.
Well, this was a period, though, where there was fighting going on between Foster, Gates, and Dennis. Do you recall?
Yes, but it was undercover. So much of it was undercover, you know, that one didn't. Dorothy said that Dennis was a very fine principal guy. She said, but he wasn't that wonderful, you know, nor that brilliant. And I met Foster was quite a friend of Dorothy's, and I met him only a few times. I really never knew him. But I went to hear his speeches, and I thought he made asinine speeches. And but I read his history of the Communist Party and his history of the black people. I thought it was the worst dribble I'd ever read.
Well, do you recall anything about this period between 56 and 58? This is when there seemed to be a lot of deceptions in the party and so much discussion. They were talking about democratizing the party.
Well, you see, it was about that time, wasn't it, that the 22... Celeste Drack, who was the darling of the party, she was a spokesman, the intellect of it and everything. She left the party. Henry Steinberg, who had been in the army and had been a devout party member, he left the party. 22 left the party. It was a staggering blow. Really a staggering blow. But Dorothy kept her friendship up with them, and she was called on the carpet for it. How can you be friends with them? She said, though they have not become enemies because they're out of the party, they are still friends and comrades. They're not the enemy. The enemy is capitalism, and they're not capitalism.
Well, what effect did these defections, like of the 22, have in your club? Did the people in your club then also begin to defect?
No. No, most of them became more devout than ever. They're really, see the strange things, Shona, and I had an example of it. It was about Dorothy. They adored Dorothy. They thought Dorothy was God's gift to them, you know, and everything. All over for one thing, she's an excellent speaker. For another thing, you know, she had access to places that going amongst professional classes that very few of them had. And yet, after, you know, Gus Hall, who was a corrupt man and everything, and then he accused Dorothy of not really, no, never really understanding socialism and everything. And I met at the Century City, and this is just a year ago. I went with some San Diego people who are far socialism but not members of the party. And I went there, and an elderly woman was sitting next to me, and she was very friendly, and she says, you know, I've seen you somewhere. I said, yes, I guess you probably saw me at the Unitarian Church. She says, yes. And I said, well, you know, I am Dorothy's mother. She said, Dorothy's mother? You mean Dorothy Healy's mother? I said, yes, Dorothy Healy's mother. And she drew away from me altogether. And I said, why don't you like Dorothy? She said, I don't want to talk about it. One time I loved her. Now I have no use for her. I said, why? I don't want to talk about it. But I said, how can you feel this way and not talk about it? Tell me why you feel this way. She didn't blast the Soviet Union. All she asked was, why did they go into Czechoslovakia? Well, don't you think one should ask questions? I don't want to talk about it, she said, shouting. And I said, well, is that intelligent? She said, I told you not, I don't want to talk about it. And I said, well, can you imagine anything more asinine than making a statement and being afraid to talk about it? How can we come to any conclusion if we can't discuss it? She said, I don't want to talk about it, and got up and walked away. Walked away completely. And this was a woman not very much younger than myself, who said she had loved Dorothy, but now she had no use for her. Why? Because she left the party and because she was critical of the Soviet Union.
Well, Barbara, what effect did Dorothy's criticisms have on you and how people reacted to you and your standing?
I agreed with Dorothy. I agree with Dorothy, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was more critical than Dorothy. And I had begun being critical even before Dorothy had.
Well, did you ever consider, for instance, over Czechoslovakia, did you consider leading the party?
Did I what?
Did you consider leading the party over the invasion of Czechoslovakia?
I thought it was terrible the Soviet Union to go into Czechoslovakia. Just terrible. I was all with the Wheelers. See, I had only read about the Wheelers. Later on, the drug dealer came, you know, and I met Eleanor, and I loved both of them, you know, and they're the kind of people socialism will produce. And I, anything they would say, I don't want to say call it the gospel truth, that to me is baloney, but it is truth. And scholar's truth. I just love these people, and I knew that they were most uncorruptible, most staunch socialist fighters that could exist anywhere.
Well, did you think about leading the party as a statement? No.
See, I'll tell you, had I been younger, I probably would have joined NAM and left the party. But as it is, I'm a charter member. I have been in since the inception of it. I'm not going to join any other party, so all I have now, if I go anywhere at all and everything, that it's kind of a gadfly. I am critical. Even Bill Taylor said, you know, our Barbara, she doesn't hesitate. You know where she stands, and there's no two ways about it.
Well, what kind of arguments did you have in your club then over Czechoslovakia?
Well, I was told in no uncertain terms that no matter what, the Soviet Union is the first socialist country. They have lost over 25 million people, and you don't criticize the Soviet Union.
And that, even in 1968, that was the position that was taken then?
But by most of them, that's right. Because it was the position by Gus Hall. And Gus Hall, who's a toady, he gets all kinds of things, benefits from the Soviet Union, gets all kinds of trips. He stays in the finest hotels, travels only first class, lives in a very nice neighborhood and everything. You know, he's gotten very material benefits from supporting the Soviet Union.
Was there no one else in your club who was opposed to the invasion of Czechoslovakia?
Oh, yes. There were quite a few of them. For instance, Rosenstein, the one we call Gabby, you know, who was in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade in Spain. Well, he is the same way Martin Hall was. He just died a few days ago, you know. And, oh yes, there were many who felt the same way.
But none of them left the party over it. They all stayed in.
Well, there had been, you know, some just dropped out without anything at all. Yes, there were quite a few who dropped out, but they never did it publicly like Dorothy.
Oh, they never made a statement.
No. But Dorothy only did because she was asked for a statement. Mm-hmm. And